When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
This episode of Canada Land is brought to you by the Center for Addiction and Mental Health, CAMH. There is an incredible facility right here in downtown Toronto that is helping on the front lines and is doing incredible innovative research. They are a facility that treats everybody with dignity, and they need your help. May 6th to 12th is Mental Health Week. If this matters to you, help CAMH. There's no better place for your resources. Go to camh.ca/CanadaLand and donate now. Help CAMH treat addiction and build hope. Drew Brown, freelance writer for Vice Canada, CBC Newfoundland contributor, joining us from St. John's, Newfoundland. Welcome.
Hello.
Drew, we're going to be talking about Margaret Wente. We're going to be talking about Maria Monsef and the burning question of Afghanistan or Iran.
Mm-hmm.
Inquiring minds want to know. And we are going to be talking about the death of Shomi.
R.I.P.
Welcome to Canada Land Shortcuts. This episode of Canada Land Shortcuts is brought to you by Steve McCallum, Scott Borries, Robert Crosby, Jessica Cataneo, Matthew Hartney, Bailey Reed, Rachel Cordner, and Suzanne Nell. Suzanne, why did you decide to be awesome?
Because I'm skeptical of the mainstream media's ability to report honestly on issues and events, and Canada Land helps me to better understand stories in the news.
And Drew, this episode is also brought to you by FreshBooks.
Mm-hmm.
As we speak, I just returned from FreshBooks offices, and I have not been before today to their new vast office. It's incredible. I used to visit them at a much smaller office, and then I think I once was at a smaller office before that. This is this local company in my backyard, anyhow, here in Toronto, that is now the best in the world at what they do. They got like over 5 million people using this cloud accounting software. What do you do for your invoices, Drew?
My invoices are basically typed up in a Word document. So yeah, I should probably actually get in on FreshBooks.
Well, my friend, it is an excellent time because they just rebuilt the whole damn thing. The reason I was there was to give this thing a whirl, and they have made it really, really simple and fun. It's sort of a strange thing to introduce to people because that was always what it was this is the simplest way to do this for non-accountants.
Right.
But they have just stripped it down and they've put the focus on the things that people want to see most. It's like this thing that companies do now where they try to disrupt themselves, like so that some other company doesn't come in and do a better FreshBooks than FreshBooks. FreshBooks just made a better FreshBooks than FreshBooks. Check it out now. 30 days free. When you do become a customer, tell them who sent you. Go to freshbooks.com/CanadaLand. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp, therapy online that has served over 3 million people around the world, and it's available here in Canada. And this time of year, we're all emerging from our winter like seclusion and, you know, patio season and socializing, and it can be terrifically fun, but it can also create a lot of pressure. And some people get like anxiety, social anxiety from being out too much. What did Iggy Pop say about social life? It's torture dressed as fun. It doesn't need to be torture. I think it's just about finding like the right balance of how much of other people do you want? I mean, we need each other, but I think that at a certain point, it can become overwhelming. And talking to somebody about yourself, about your social life, about your relationships is a way of gaining insight into what is right for you. It's not selfish to examine that with a professional. And as the largest online therapy provider in the world, BetterHelp can provide access to mental health professionals with a wide variety of expertise in mental health. Listeners of the show get 10% off of their first month at betterhelp.com/CanadaLand. That's better, H-E-L-P, betterhelp.com/CanadaLand. This episode of Canada Land is brought to you by the Center for Addiction and Mental Health, CAMH. We got a tour of their facilities in their downtown Toronto campus, and I was blown away by the heroic work that these people are doing. They are saving lives every day. I know people whose lives were saved, and they just really care about the dignity of the people who turn to them for help. Look, we talk a lot about these issues on Canada Land. We talk about the crisis that is claiming 20 lives every day in Canada to drug overdoses, but we don't give you a lot of options of what you can do about it. CAMH is an option. CAMH desperately needs resources that they directly put into their work, saving lives and turning people's lives around. Listen, May 6th to 12th is Mental Health Week. This is when they need your help the most. Go to camh.ca/CanadaLand to help CAMH treat addiction and build hope.
So just tell us, Margaret Wente, you write this column. What are you saying? You're sorry?
Yeah. I think I got Newfoundland wrong, and I think I got Newfoundlanders wrong. I didn't know I was going to write the column, by the way, before our big trip, or even during the big trip. But after I got back, I started to reflect, and I said, yeah, I really feel like I've got something to say here, so I should say it.
Perhaps, as some people have been saying, you should have visited the province before you wrote that article in 2005.
Well, you know, I was kind of scared.
Drew?
Yes.
You are a Newfoundlander.
This is correct.
Do you accept Margaret Wente's apology?
I mean, it's cool that she, you know, after 11 fucking years, she finally decides to show up and tour like the most gentrified parts of the island and decide that, you know, like we're not actually an island full of welfare leeches living in a scenic welfare ghetto. And in fact, we're a nice sort of kind, genteel, salt of the earth, quaint people with a fun way of speaking and archaic methods of life. But I can't on principle. I think it's stupid. I think this whole thing is fucking stupid, really.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying. I think we should probably give people like a short history of Margaret Wente's adventures in Newfoundland, or at least writing about Newfoundland. This all started with a column she wrote, like you say, 11 years ago, which she wrote having not been to Newfoundland. This was when Newfoundland was appealing to Ottawa for disbursements to offset the fact that the entire fishing industry had been destroyed, arguably because of things that Ottawa allowed to happen. And they're saying, well, now that you've destroyed our way of living and our economies, we are asking for assistance. And Margaret Wente described, like, en masse, Newfoundlanders as welfare bums, on the pogie, I think is how she put it. You don't get the Globe and Mail in Newfoundland. Like, this national newspaper doesn't actually deliver to Newfoundland, does it?
First, I just want to like back up like a little bit before I get into the Globe and Mail part. So in 2005, the cod moratorium at this point had been on for like 13 years or something. So what was happening was Newfoundland oil was coming online, and suddenly we had a little bit more money. And so they were thinking of like tinkering with the equalization formula, which would see us like get less money in proportion to the oil revenues that we were bringing in. So in 2005, there's a big conflict between the Danny Williams government here and Ottawa, which ultimately, because Williams is sort of a petulant guy with a real flair for drama, he ended up like pulling down the Canadian flags, which sort of really rankled a lot of sort of upper Canadian media people, much like Margaret Wente. So she sort of just flew off the handle, like how they're this island of ungrateful welfare bums, take down this sacred symbol of Canada, fuck everybody, sort of thing, which, as you can imagine, didn't go over very well here. The Globe at the time was delivered to Newfoundland, but I think it was like temporarily just sort of banned, like stores here wouldn't carry it for a while after that happened.
Really? Because,
yeah, so eventually I think somebody at the Globe apologized. I don't think it was Wente, or eventually, you know, we sort of decided that it was water under the bridge and the Globe would carry here again. And then in 2013, they just, I guess it's not profitable for them to send newspapers.
So fast forward to this recent Wente column where she writes that she got it wrong and she apologizes. And to fill people in, there were two big problems with this most recent apology. Mm-hmm. The first might be an inside journalism kind of a thing where she was. Well, so she visits Fogo Island, and she really just wonderfully captures the quaint quality of the salt of the earth people that she encounters there, these hardworking people with their cute accents. But she did not identify herself as a journalist. In fact, she did not use her byline name. She used her maiden name because she was afraid that she'd be lynched, I suppose, in Newfoundland.
Yeah.
And then she ends up quoting these locals who did not know they were talking to a reporter, which is like, that's like rule number one, is if you're like, you're supposed to identify yourself. And here I'll actually cut her some slack. Like, sometimes you're out in the world and you experience something, you want to write about it later. You were not encountering the world as a journalist when you experienced it. So you did not have the opportunity, or it didn't occur to you to say, hey, by the way, can I get a quote? I'm a reporter. She might have called back and said, I'm going to be using... Anyhow, that's one part of this. But I think the bigger part of it is, and this was pointed out in one of your local publications, The Independent, She doesn't actually apologize, right?
No.
She says the words, I'm sorry, but she's not saying, I'm sorry, I got it wrong. You're not trying to fleece Ottawa. I had the political situation incorrect way back in the day. She seems to be saying, oh, Fogo Island at least has recovered its economy through massively inflated boutique tourist business to people like me. And they're like, Newfoundland has got the interest of chefs in Ontario, and it's got high-priced tourist trade, at least in Fogo Island. And these people are, now that I've met them, they're really nice and quaint, kind of like Smurfs in Smurf Village. And therefore, yeah. I apologize. So I could understand why the apology might not be accepted.
And that's the thing, right? It's like, yeah, okay, like we all know that there are issues with the economy here. I don't think anybody's going to deny that. I think that's been fairly obvious for like the last 150 years of Newfoundland history. But I think the real problem is just like the condescending tone. Like she really didn't understand anything and just kind of like flew off the handle at the, you know, like how we're such bad poor people. And so now the big apology is she actually did come here and she spent time in, you know, God bless Fogo Island as the economic success story, but it really is, if you looked up gentrification in a dictionary, you would see a picture of the Fogo Island Inn, right? It's this totally inaccessible, unaffordable inn to anybody that actually, for most of us that actually live here. And it's the same condescending attitude of almost like an upper Canadian caricature, right? This like haughty person from Toronto comes down and realizes that we're not actually all welfare bums. You know, we're the good poor people now. We're hardworking and we have quaint and simple ways. And, you know, it's really sort of like authentic as opposed to, you know, all the trappings of modernity that are fake and inauthentic. But she's like swapping one really stupid, horrible, condescending caricature for another and then and then trying to like pawn this off as like, I learned my lesson, which it's like, it's insane.
It's also like you do something awful, then you apologize. It's just she's like whipping up her own drama. But we're singing an old song here. Like you can almost have like Margaret Wente journalistic integrity violation bingo. Like there was another one that just came out where a recent column of hers, one of the sources whose like research that she cites in it just piped up on Twitter to say, yeah, I was never called for this article and she misrepresents my work. So, you know, the plagiarism, this stuff, we're getting to a point where like this little game I play in my head of like, explain Margaret Wente to somebody who's not from Canada and why she's still in the paper. Like, I don't know how you even begin that.
I have thought a lot about this in the 11 years since everybody here started caring about Margaret Wente. I mean, the Globe has found this perfect way to just monetize like hate reading, because I can't fathom the kind of person who like reads a Margaret Wente article and is like, this is excellent. I agree with all of this. Thank God this woman is telling the truth. I mean, I'm sure those people are out there, but they're such a small minority of the actual people that like click on the articles and read them and share them and like get outraged. I mean, you know, like you want to talk about like clickbait. I think the Globe has sort of perfected it in Wente in that like her material is basically indefensible. Like it's unclear to what extent she's like involved in actually writing it herself or doing it professionally and ethically and like whatever, they're all horrible and all the opinions in them are horrible and like they have no literal merit on their own grounds, but because they're so fucking outrageous that they can keep being printed and they have to make somebody money, right?
No, no, Drew, no, this is what I'm saying, man. We can understand horrible, horrible voices that make money. We can understand like the Bill O'Reillys, like those people at least make a certain sense, even if you don't like them. Wente, I've said this before, I have yet to read a cogent economic argument for Margaret Wente's inclusion. Clicks don't make money anymore. And Margaret Wente is putting so much stink on the Globe and Mail brand. Their business model is about subscriptions and the paywall. She ain't helping them there. So something else has to, this is like, if I do nothing else, I want to get to the bottom of like, you know, what is the blood pact or what blackmail videos are involved in this? Does it have to do with the Thompson family? Like why? Someone please tell me why.
And a Liberal cabinet minister is facing her own personal challenge after some unexpected family history went public. Mariam Monsef came to Canada as an Afghan refugee, but she confirmed today it is not where she was born.
Are you as shocked and scandalized by this news as I am not?
Yeah, I mean, I heard the story broke, and I mean, my base reaction was like, okay, sure.
I'm trying to see this. Okay, so this just seems to me like, who cares if you understand anything about displaced people and refugees and the way that people move between borders when their lives are interrupted by war. If I think about members of my own family who, like, the border was shifting between Russia and Poland, depending on the week, mm-hmm. in Ukraine. If I think about, like, in-laws I have, like, in the wake of the Holocaust, you know, my father-in-law was born in Uzbekistan. Then he was, like, mm-hmm. in Sweden, but he was originally from Poland. Or it might have been Russia. I'll give it to you both ways. I want to get that right or else I'm going to be in trouble. But of course, he's originally from Russia. To hold him responsible that something is wrong on the form, years, it just seems ludicrous. And it just seems like the ugliest sort of political, real politic, like just taking advantage of a situation. And now we're reading headlines that, like, she should lose her citizenship or something.
It is a little bit, like, strange, right? I mean, it's sort of been, like, reading about it, and she was born, like, just over the border in Iran, I think, like, in a community that was, like, you know, it was a very big Afghan community, like, 2 hours from the border or something. And it's such, like, a minute, like, technical difference that really would, like, not matter to anybody who wasn't, like, super paranoid about, I don't know, some sort of, like, Iranian racial science reasoning of, like, well, these people can't be trusted inherently, which is, like, it's just so bonkers. I don't understand, like, why it's getting the amount of play that it's getting.
I don't either, but you know what? I try to see things from other people's perspectives and not just, like, oh, this is just cynical politics. I got an email from a listener who was appalled, not by the fact that this information was misreported by Mariam Monsef's right. mother, but, well, here's mm-hmm. what they wrote. I'm really disappointed with our media for not giving more attention to this story. It's a serious crime to not tell the truth to Immigration Canada. We live in a country that supposedly dispenses justice equally. My wife is an immigrant and two of my children were born outside of Canada. I've jumped through every fucking hoop with Immigration Canada. I have had really poor, crappy service from them and they are real assholes to deal with. With my experience of jumping through hoops and complying with all of the laws and regulations and taking seriously the notice on Immigration Canada's website that it is a serious crime to lie, it really gets my ire up that a federal minister and or her mother may have committed a serious crime and there are no repercussions because of Minister Monsef's position. It is outrageous that they are protected by a two-tier justice system. So that's a little food for thought there. I mean, first of all, there's some conclusions jumped to here. We don't know what the outcome of this is going to be yet.
Yeah.
And it's sort of like unclear as to whether this person is more enraged by the media, which, I mean, it's not as if this has gone unnoticed, or with some supposed two-tier, you know, special treatment that she might be receiving. I get that aspect. If you feel like no consideration would be made for you, but that's going to happen for her, you know, yeah, we're supposed to dispense justice equally. That makes sense, I guess.
But I mean, it's a case of, like, was this sort of, like, a deliberate error to conceal this sort of, like, sketchy background? You know, like, is it just, like, an oversight filling out a form?
They identify as Afghani. To give benefit of the doubt, like, I don't even know what that sketchy, like, I don't know. Maybe if you go back, was it easier to get in if you were from Iran, Iran than Afghanistan? I don't know. Like, but you know, whatever it was, it wasn't her doing. And the thing feels ugly and unnecessary to me.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what the immigration laws were like, you know, at the time when they applied, but I imagine I can't imagine, you know, like, choosing to say that, you know, like, we are from Afghanistan at a point of, like, brutal civil war versus, you know, like, we were born at this, you know, like, I don't know how that would have factored into it, but I can't see it making a huge amount of difference, right, where it's, like, suddenly way more advantageous to claim Afghanistan as place of birth versus the Iranian hospital on the border.
You know, the other thing is, Drew, that, like, increasingly there are substantive things that you can find a lot of fault with the Trudeau government going back on promises, be it in the actual, like, not the rhetoric around reconciliation, but the ways in which they're actually dealing with Indigenous people, some of the pipeline stuff, the targets, which are mm-hmm. a lot of the stuff which is just completely unchanged from what Stephen Harper's government was doing. Like, you can actually get into a substantive thing. So I kind of question, like, picking away at these things. And yet, you know, what can you do? When this thing comes out about the moving expenses, I had the same reaction. This is just nonsense. And actually, if what Jerry Butts ultimately said was, fuck off, everybody has been doing this, this is ridiculous. But, like, he did that Facebook post where he suddenly was uncomfortable with a certain percentage of it. I asked for an explanation of just like how this accounting works. And what I found was the part that he and Katie Telford are giving back. I didn't see this widely reported. I'm just going to touch on this. The part that they're giving back is this cash payout that was hard to figure out like what exactly that was out of this like $200,000-ish dollars that they incurred in moving to Ottawa. The part that they are giving back is the part where they didn't actually max out as much as they could have spent on moving. And the way the system works is they incentivize you to not completely screw the taxpayer for every dime you can. And it's some kind of scheme where, okay, you could have spent, and I'm just pulling these numbers out abstractly, I don't know what the actual numbers are. It was within your rights to spend an additional $50,000 on moving and you didn't. So we're going to give you a check for $20,000. If you assume that everybody using the system is just a rapacious, like completely amoral person who doesn't care about spending taxpayer money, and that they would like, you know, FedEx a box of diapers across the country, then this is a way that you'd actually save the government $30,000. So Jerry Butts is saying, well, you know, they gave me this check for, I don't know, $20,000, I think it was ish. And I'm not comfortable being paid for not maximizing my privilege. So I'm going to give that back. And of course, he's only suddenly uncomfortable with that because he got caught. I mean, he didn't get caught doing anything against the rules, but he got caught doing something that I think is kind of gross and appalling. But it's the policy that's appalling, you know. But the illusion through a Facebook post, not talking to the media, not going through any official channels, this suddenly he found this sense of discomfort and, you know, he's going to get austere about this and take the high road and provide more transparency than anyone else before. That just kind of hurt my teeth a little bit.
It is what it is, really, I guess. But yeah, I mean, it seems like it's strange that we're so fixated on these ultimately, I think, relatively minor points. Like, yeah, it's not great that they're, I'm not going to say scamming, but taking advantage of a generous reimbursement policy, let's say.
There you go. It just slides off the tongue. Yeah, okay, yeah. That's not a scam. It's not a scam. It's just kind of gross in the banal ways that a lot of things are gross in Ottawa, I think.
Yeah. It's funny that we spend so much time focused on this versus these actual sort of like substantive things that Trudeau has done or has not done, right? Like, so, you know, they just approved the LNG port and then, you know, they sort of walk back from like any sort of ambitious climate targets to sort of, well, we'll actually just keep doing exactly what the Harper government was doing.
Like, how about that? Like, isn't that something with this like wonderful young progressive new government worth like getting more upset about?
I think it absolutely is. But I think, I mean, fundamentally, I think the Trudeau government just happens to be like way better at selling a lot of the shit that it does. I mean, even if at the end of the day, we sort of just end up with like Harperism with a human face, and what a fucking face.
Drew, I want to duly note something that just popped up. A consortium of print media in the province of Quebec are demanding from the government a bailout. They want the government to fund their transition to digital because what they do is so very important covering the news. And they've all gotten together and they have like five different ways they want to get paid. One of which is like they want government advertising in their newspapers. They want huge tax credits for any kind of labor they put into digital transition or even the equipment that they use. And I wanted to duly note that is just, first of all, more than anything else, it's embarrassing for a free and independent press to be groveling with their hats out while simultaneously trying to assume this high road of we are needed by society is like they're asking the government to put them in the most compromised position. And it's also a lie, like the idea that with this subsidy, they will then make the transition and become sustainable operations. No one can promise that. And it, of course, as somebody running a digital news operation, it's like them just like asserting that they are the ones who can provide this when I know there are digital news startups in Quebec and we operate in Quebec. We're a national service that they want the subsidies. Their consortium is print media where we must preserve print media. We do not have to preserve print media. It's important to keep news around. It is not important to keep print media around. And I just wanted to bring that to your attention.
Duly noted.
Do you have something for us, Drew?
Yes, actually, I would like to highlight the work that the independent.ca in Newfoundland has been doing on the issue of Muskrat Falls in Labrador. So I don't know how far this news has gotten to the rest of Canada, but Muskrat Falls is basically a massive hydroelectric project. The consensus the province has now arrived at is that this is a humongous mess. We probably never should have gotten into it. Nobody seems to know how to get out of it. We're on the hook for up to, I think, $12 billion to build this hydroelectric project that may or may not produce anything of value. It's probably going to raise our electricity rates prohibitively. We're not going to be able to do anything with electricity, a whole slew of problems. But mainly, I think a problem that has been undercovered by a lot of the traditional media in our province is the issue of like how this dam will actually impact the indigenous peoples living in the area of the project and the reservoir. Nalcor and the provincial government do intend to go ahead with building this hydroelectric project, even though, you know, like Harvard studies have come out showing that if they do this, if they go ahead and build the reservoir, there is a very significant likelihood, even guarantee almost, that Lake Melville will be increased in methylmercury, which is, you know, a significant poison and will significantly harm the indigenous people's food supply in the area. So the Independent, actually, even though the fact that, you know, this is largely a labor of love for people, Justin Brake, I know him, he's a good guy. I don't think he makes very much money at this just because it's a total shoestring operation. But despite, you know, this sort of like economic hurdles, they've been doing excellent work in covering the issues in Labrador and actually like talking to the people that are affected by this and actually getting the voices of the Nunatsiavut government in the area and the other Inuit and Innu groups that are actually directly affected by this. And yeah, I just wanted to point out that they're doing excellent work and I think they should get recognition for it.
Yeah, I think maybe we need to take a closer look at them and the kind of stuff they're doing. So look for that on Canada Land of the Future. Thank you, Drew. Now is the time on the show when we thank our second sponsor, ShipStation. If you ship things to people who buy them and you do that through the internet, you want to use ShipStation to do that because otherwise it's quite a headache to manage this stuff through all the different selling channels that exist. Etsy and Shopify, your own website, all, and there's like dozens of places that you are likely selling your stuff. In the time that it took me to explain that to you, ShipStation will just suck all of your order data onto their platform and then figure out the best way to ship it because it's compatible with UPS, Canada Post, FedEx, everything. And then it'll spit out a shipping label for you. It'll find the most affordable solution and give you everything you need. It'll save you so much time. Try ShipStation. It gets a 5 out of 5 from Shopify users. It is the number one choice for online sellers. And I got a special offer for listeners of this podcast right now. You can try it for free for 30 days, plus a special bonus only if you use the offer code CanadaLand. And the way to do that is to go right now to ShipStation.ca. And before you do anything else, click on the microphone at the top of the homepage and type in CanadaLand. That is ShipStation.ca. Enter CanadaLand.
Well, Rogers and Shaw, Rogers Communications and Shaw Communications, are winding down the Show Me TV and movie streaming service. That's effective November the 30th. This certainly caught me by surprise.
Drew, do you use any of these? Crave, Show Me, what's that other one? Netflix. You use any of those?
Yeah, I was one of the 5 people in Canada that actually did have Show Me, and I thought it was great. The arrangement in our house has sort of been, we'll have Netflix and Show Me and Crave, and then those 3 things together, which costs still significantly less, I think, than cable per month. You have access to, like, you know, like they all sort of like complement each other quite nicely. Show Me, especially the TV show selection on Show Me was amazing, especially given that the one on Canadian Netflix is sort of garbage. So
yeah,
it's pretty unfortunate news, I think.
Drew, you know why Netflix's library is such a shadow of American Netflix's? I mean, it's getting better, but why it's kind of relatively crappy?
To be totally honest, I'm not 100% sure. I just sort of assume that it has something to do with CRTC regulations.
No, not at all. No, CRTC has nothing to do with these over-the-top services. The reason why Netflix Canada is nowhere near as good as Netflix USA is because of Show Me, or rather because of Rogers and Shaw and Bell. All of these companies were signing the Canadian broadcast rights for a bunch of TV shows, and then for years they would just get the digital rights thrown in, and then of course there's a bunch of content that they control the rights to. And they would not play ball with Netflix because they were afraid of Netflix, okay? And that's fine. Netflix is a definite threat to their existence. It's definitely a threat to cable TV, and these companies, of course, also do that.
Mm-hmm.
They're not just fighting content with content. They want you to keep you on cable. And so when they launched their own Netflix competitor, it's like, okay, at least like they're not just going to hoard the rights. They're going to get in there and fight. And they just didn't fight very well. I think you're right that they had wonderful archives of old TV shows, but Netflix drives subscription with original content. It's the HBO model. Like, you sign up for HBO because everyone's talking about The Sopranos. That's the way it worked back in the day. And now you sign up for Netflix because one of the many shows they produce is the show that you really want to see, and that's what gets you on board. They didn't do any original content for Crave. And the other thing is, there's another like annoying Canadian thing about the Crave Show Me thing. That was all supposed to be one rival service, right? Like, it was supposed to be Bell, Cineplex, yeah, and Shaw and Rogers putting together a Netflix competitor. And instead, they had a little pissing match and they couldn't get together on it. So now you got to like subscribe to two different services. Like, if they had had a larger library, and if they actually tried to make some stuff, I'm reading these headlines now that are like, oh, you can't fight with Netflix. They didn't even try to fight with Netflix. Netflix fights with original content.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing, right? It's like we have all the worst features of a cartel and like none of the benefits. Like, they can't even like collaborate long enough to like run their competitor out of business, right? Like, it's just, it's ludicrous.
Hasn't anyone told them how the organized crime is supposed to work? You're going to unite against a common foe.
Listen, I mean, like, the golden age of TV has been all about sort of like anti-heroes and organized crime. I mean, come on. Like, the people that sort of like selling this shit on our TVs. They couldn't pick up some lessons from, you know, fucking Tony or Walt. I mean, come on.
And is there a cause that is like harder to get behind than we need a Canadian answer to Netflix that has no original Canadian content on? Like, all they are like hustlers of American content. And really, they're just standing in the way between viewers and that content. And now what's going to happen to the rights to all that stuff? It's just stranded again, and it's going to push people back into piracy. Mm-hmm. There's so many angles of awful to this. They claim we had 900,000 subscribers. They did not have 900,000 subscribers. They didn't have 900,000 people paying for Show Me, okay? They had like something under 100,000, I think, paying. And then a lot of people who they would bundle it in to keep you in cable, because they weren't really trying to fight with Netflix. They were just trying to keep you in cable by throwing in this Show Me thing. And now those people are screwed too, because like if you went for one of their cable packages partly because of that, you don't get that anymore. That was part of the deal, and now it's off the table. You know, so the 900,000 is indicative of that full number. And of course, it doesn't come close to, like, Netflix was able to come in Canada, and like overnight, there are like 5 million people in this country.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing, like, Drew, about this is that it's happening at the same time that we're getting the impact on the TV industry of the CRTC's change to the, like, you know, like, Kate Taylor had a piece in the Globe about how, you know, Tatiana Maslany for Orphan Black just won the Emmy, and, you know, she never would have gotten that role if the rules were what they are now, and the rules now mean that, like, they're not going to have to hire Canadians anymore to make Canadian, like, it's all moot, because it all relies on CRTC. Mm-hmm. Taxing of cable and satellite subscriptions, which, like, there's still money there, but really, like, it's an overused analogy, but they are absolutely rearranging the deck chairs on the Titanic, and these rapacious companies, yeah, they want to have less obligation to prop up the Canadian production system because they're failing. But of course, they're failing because of things like Netflix, and they're just, you know where this is going, right? They are throwing in the towel. They're saying, we can't compete. We're not going to try. We're out of the content game. And increasingly, you're just going to see the Rogers and Shaws and Bells. They're just going to get your money at the pipe. When you pay them for your internet access, they're going to charge you for using Netflix, basically. We're going to continue to pay really high internet rates because they can't fight with the content, so they're going to control the pipe, and they're going to bilk us for that.
Yeah, which is, I mean, that's really frustrating, right? Because, like, collectively, if they collaborated on producing content and marketing good content nearly as well as they collaborate on, you know, like, gouging customers, I think this wouldn't even be an issue. But here we are. I mean, this is like the age-old lament of Canadian content, right? Like, everybody wants Canadian content, but they don't want to give us any Canadian content worth watching, apparently.
Yeah.
So that's it. We're stuck. Yeah, we're stuck, you know, like, trying to get American Netflix and then being slapped down and not getting American Netflix, stuck watching Canadian Netflix, and then being charged to pay for the privilege. It's brutal.
It's brutal, but you know what? I think that maybe this might be an unstucking, like, good riddance. Like, I want them out of the content game, you know, like the whole deal where they get this like monopoly on broadcasting American shows, but then they pay back by making Canadian shows. They're made not with their money, but with like a fraction of the money that we pay them. Like, that whole thing is just being, it's just failed from the start. In the long run, it just hasn't been healthy. And I know that a lot of people are afraid for their jobs, and they're afraid for the industry of like what's going to happen to Canadian production. Like, let's focus on content. Like, it's not my opinion. You know what I mean? Like, the only way forward in this environment is to fight with content.
No, absolutely. And that's the thing, like, the model that we have right now is not working. So, yeah, I mean, I think good riddance. Once this sort of breaks apart a little bit, we'll see some maybe new and interesting and compelling alternatives provided, finally.
Don't you think that would work? You know, like, if there was a, like, an actually Canadian Netflix that was like, look, we have put together the best archive of Canadian film and television from the past, but more than that, we are really going to, like, start up our own original production where we're going for it. You have to build it. It would take some time. You'd have to have a show that was actually good and prove to people that you can make it. But, like, you don't think people would pay $9 a month for something like that? Like, and that was just continually making stuff and telling interesting stories. Like, we could totally compete. Like, we always throw in the towel before anybody even tries.
I know, right? I mean, even if you just look at the history of, like, Netflix, right? I mean, that's basically what they did. They started small, they built it. They didn't really offer that much original programming when it first came online. And now, you know, after however many years of plugging away at it, then yeah, like, I think their plan is to, what, have half their content be original programming in the next few years? Like, that's amazing. The model clearly works. We just have to, somebody has to actually, like, work it, which so far in, you know, the Canadian telecom industry, we haven't really seen.
Drew, thank you very much.
No problem.
That is your Canada Land Shortcuts. I hope you enjoyed it. You can email me anytime at jesse@canadalandshow.com. We are on Twitter @CanadaLand. Drew, where can people find you?
They can find me at Drewfinland on Twitter, which is, you know, Newfoundland, but Drewfinland.
Brilliant. Our website is canadalandshow.com. Our crowdfunding site is patreon.com/CanadaLand. I make this show with Kevin Sexton. We syndicate Canada Land to community and campus radio stations across this country. We do that for free, and that is handled by Russell Gregg. If you like what we do, please support us.